Welcome to Scary Basement. Each week, me and my friend Mike here drawn inexplicably and supernaturally to this basement, which is full of carnivorous hats with teeth, a dog that has a tentacle for a head, and a tiny little evil invisible elf that is stealing all your secrets so they can blackmail you when you least expect it. I'm Roxy.
And my name is Mikey McCaller. I don't like this elf, Roxy.
I'm Roxy Polk. There you go.
I couldn't tell if you were rebranding.
I have it in my notes for my last name is not included, so I just said it. And then when I said it, it felt wrong. And then, like, you paused. And I was like, yeah, that felt weird.
That was weird.
But yeah, that little elf is up to no good. He's invisible, so you can't tell when he's sitting on your shoulder stealing all your secrets. Your bank information.
He just stole a secret from me.
Shit.
Mikey thinks it would be cool if Roxy went by just her first name.
Well, that's not the worst secret then. So, okay. Next intro, no last names.
It's the kind of thing I wouldn't have brought up. Clearly wasn't a decision you were making.
So, Mikey, let's start out, as we always do, with the scariest things that happened to us this week. So, what went down in your life outside of the scary basement that spooked you to your bones?
Roxy, last week I talked about what was making me most happy was the Resident Evil 4 remake.
Yeah,
and this week,
it was a delight.
The thing that's scaring me the most.
Oh, no.
Lot of scary moments that jump scare me. And I want to double check, how far are you in it? I don't want to spoil anything necessarily.
So I got to the castle. Shoot, okay. Where did I save? I was in the dungeon and stuff, so I did all that. Man, I had myself a sneak. Nice knife fight. I love that.
With the Garrador, right?
Yeah.
There's a blind monster who has giant Wolverine claws and can't see.
Yeah, this game gives you options to do stealth sometimes, and it's an entire boss fight that you can just stealth it, which made me very happy. But I'm a little bit past that.
That was very much a moment that I have jotted down here. You fall through the floor into a dark room,
Your
character turns around, and there's just a blind monster man. He's his eyes stitched shut, and he screams at you.
he's just like a couple inches away from you too. Like,
yeah.
In the first game, he was like kind of scary, but also sort of video gamey in a way that just like didn't feel threatening in the same way. Like they made him legit scary now, which I was like, yeah, that's so cool. What a good thing to do. That's great.
There are, that was a moment that got under my skin. There's another moment that, like, you played the original Resident Evil 4. You know there are certain monsters coming late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They do something very funny and very surprising with one of the later game monsters. A monster that maybe regenerates a bit. Maybe
he cut
off an arm and he gets a new arm. They have a fun little twist on him that very much scared me and very much pushed me to my edge. It was very much the scariest thing that happened to me this week.
Holy shit. Okay, so me and Mikey had an episode on our Super NPC Patreon where we did like scary boss tier, and the regenerators were in my scary boss tier, even though it's not even a boss, it's just like a regular creature. So I'm looking forward to that. That's gonna be terrifying.
Yeah. Very subtle, very fun, a really smart decision, and it very much scared me. Roxy, what was scaring you this week?
The thing that scared me this week, Mikey, is an old favorite, a trusted partner that is my eyeliner, my favorite eyeliner that I've been using for years, has turned against me.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like now making my eyelids swell up and like kind of burn when I use it, so I can no longer use it anymore.
Roxy, are you with a Garrador monster?
Have you become blinded
and picked up your giant Wolverine claws and developed a bug on your back?
I might have. You know, I haven't checked back there, but my back has been kind of hurting, so you know what? could be a Garrador parasite monster.
You're Garrador adjacent. Okay, so that sucks. Your eyes are being destroyed by an old friend.
Yeah, it's very weird. I don't know if they, like, change the chemicals that are in it or something, I guess. It was just, like, ink I put on my face and it was fine for literal years. And then suddenly my skin is just like, we reject this. And get used to having puffy eyelids now so it looks like I've been crying for, like, 3 days.
interesting. Not to give it away, but my What's Making Me Happy is kind of a dark mirror to this.
Oh, okay. I can't even imagine what that could be. Interesting. Yeah. But so I did the thing where I have to now try out a bunch of different brands. And so I spent like $40 on like different eyeliners at Target the other day. So I'm going to have to try them out now and see if any of these are going to be a good replacement, I guess. Because for years I didn't do eyeliner because I was using the wrong type. I was using kind of like those wax pencil type ones or whatever, where it would just like smudge under my eyes and make me look like a panda and gross and terrible.
Yeah, like you were like an NFL linebacker who was trying to keep the sun out of his eyes.
Truly, truly, it's what it would make me look like. And I was like, are my eyes just like busted? The shape of my eyes is just making it happen like that? Like, what's going on? But I think it was just because I wasn't using the liquid liner, which is just basically like, yeah, drawing with an ink pen. Not even like ink pen, because I don't like the felt tip ones. The ones that are like a brush, essentially. Mm. A brush with ink in it. It feels like I'm inking a comic page, but on my face.
Right. Yeah, you went to college for ink. You should be good at this. You went to illustration school, art school, comic school is what it's called.
Anyway, speaking of things that we invest a lot of time in and don't give us much back, DemonBot's coming over here.
Mikey and Roxy, this week you were assigned the 1987 film The Lost Boys. Did you watch the film, or are your souls forfeit?
Roxy, I did in fact watch The Lost Boys, did you?
I too watched The Lost Boys.
Then you may keep your souls. For now.
Oh man, Mikey, he just jumped on a motorcycle and drove away. Very like a cool guy.
Holy shit.
I think he's been learning something from these Lost Boys.
I'm going to see if I can get together with him and smoke some cigarettes that our parents don't know about.
Okay, just make sure if he gives you a bottle, don't drink it, Mikey.
Because it's booze and I'm not yet 21?
Yes, but it's also booze mixed with blood. There's blood in there. He's going to turn you into a vampire.
Yeah, that sounds like him.
Yeah. So yes, we watched The Lost Boys from 1987 this week. So how about for everyone listening up at the basement door, we give them a plot recap of the movie. What do you say, Mikey?
I'm into it. Let's do it.
All right.
The movie opens with Michael, Sam, and their mom, Lucy, as they move in with their grandfather, who lives in Santa Carla, California. Michael, he's a cool kid. Sam's a bit of a nerd. Mom is very nice. Not a lot to mom. And Grandpa is a quirky weirdo who taxidermies animals in his basement. Mom, Lucy, gets a job in town at a video store run by Max, a bachelor who is immediately interested in dating her.
While at a beach concert featuring an oiled-up saxophone man that gets a lot of screen time, Michael spies a cute girl that he just can't take his eyes off. Her name is Star, and she seems to be dating David, who is the leader of a teen biker gang. Eventually, David and the gang challenge Michael to multiple tests of courage as an initiation into the gang, ending with them offering Michael a bottle. Star tells him it's blood and that he doesn't have to drink. But he thinks she's just messing with him and drinks it anyway.
The next day, Michael begins to undergo his change into a vampire. Because guess what? The bottle really was full of blood. That wasn't a bit. It wasn't funny, Star. Meanwhile, Sam has met some vampire hunter kids known as the Frog Brothers at a local comic book shop. They attempt to teach him about fighting the undead, which Sam disregards until Michael, confused and craving blood, nearly attacks him. Sam is saved by his dog, Nanook, and Michael is horrified by what he almost did to his little brother. After looking in the mirror, Sam and Michael both realize that Michael is starting to disappear in his reflection, which means he is a vampire, or at the very least, a half-vampire.
Michael asks for help, and Sam agrees to enlist the help of the Frog Brothers. They suspect that Max is the head vampire for some reason, and when Lucy invites him over for a date at their house, Sam and the Frog Brothers attempt to try to test him with garlic and then to see if he has a reflection, which he does. So it turns out they were wrong. Meanwhile, David is trying to provoke Michael into killing to feed and becoming a permanent member of the gang and a vampire, but he refuses.
Michael goes to Star, who says that both she and Laddie, the youngest member of the group, are still partially human and have never killed before. In fact, Star was supposed to kill Michael as her first kill, and then therefore fully become a vampire, but she just couldn't do it. The boy was too sexy. The two of them spend the night together, and Michael agrees to help Star and Laddie escape. The next day, Michael, Sam, and the Frog Brothers descend into the vampire lair and kill one of the gang members with a stake through the heart as he sleeps upside down from the ceiling. The commotion from this awakens the other vampires, and boy oh boy, there is a scuffle.
The vamp kill squad is able to escape with Star and Laddie and fortify Michael and Sam's house, knowing that David and his vampire gang will retaliate and kill them the following night if they don't fight back. We then get a montage of setting up traps and pilfering holy water from a church and stuff.
As night falls, David's gang sieges the house. The Frog Brothers, Sam, and the dog Nanook are able to take out two of the vampire gang members, absolutely ruining the house's plumbing in the process, among other things. Michael and David then have a big showdown, both fighting with their vampire abilities and flying all around. Eventually, David is impaled and he dies. But killing the head vampire was supposed to cure everyone that they've turned. And yet, Michael, Star, and Laddie are still vampires.
So David also wasn't the lead vampire, like they had assumed. While trying to figure out what to do, Lucy and Max come back from their cute little date. The house has been absolutely destroyed, and David's corpse is on full display. As Max looks at David's corpse, something seems off about him. He then reveals that he is in fact the lead vampire, and that his reflection only showed earlier in the dinner date because he had been invited in. Not sure why that works, but whatever.
Max then elaborates that he desired Lucy to be a vampire mom to his vampire sons, David and the gang. Max instructed them to recruit Michael and eventually Sam, knowing that if both her sons were vampires, then Lucy would have no choice but to join them and therefore him forever. As Max attempts to bite Lucy, Grandpa crashes his truck through the wall of the house and impales Max with a big old wooden spike, killing him until he's dead.
Michael, Star, and Laddie are then returned to normal, and Grandpa gives a zinger that he loves living in Santa Clara, except for all the vampires, revealing that, yes, Grandpa knew about all the vampires the whole time. The end.
The end. What a bunch of lost boys.
They sure were.
Roxy, I do want to talk about that saxophone song for a second.
Okay, yep.
Fucking yeah. Rules.
The concert, that guy, the energy he is giving off is so intense. It was kind of fascinating.
The song is called I Still Believe, and I had to find it. I had to look for
really?
It on the internet. It's such a jam. It's got a sudden saxophone solo.
What was it called again, Mikey?
I Still Believe.
I still
and it
believe.
Is on Spotify is the name of this music app.
Okay,
and
perfect.
It's a jam. I love it. I love this sexy saxophone, man. I feel like the 80s were a sexy time for saxophones. It was their peak.
Yeah.
Probably as a musical instrument. And they just really sound like the era. I feel like 80s are a good time for a saxophonist.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, synthwave kind of sounding stuff and like saxophone music like this and everything definitely evokes the time period. And I gotta say, this movie in general evokes a time period. This is one of the yes, 80-ass, most 80-ass fucking movies I've ever watched in my entire life. And that is a good thing. It's a fun thing to be kind of transported back into an era and see a movie that just revels in that era.
Absolutely, yeah. It's directed by Joel Schumacher.
Okay.
Who I know from the second half of the Tim Burton Batman series. He did Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
Which ones are those? Are those the ones with the nipple suits or?
Yes, they do have nipple suits. Okay. It's the Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones as Riddler and Two-Face respectively movie. And then okay. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy and Mr. Freeze
okay.
movies. But just watching this movie, it feels like a prototype Batman Forever. I was just noticing a lot of, like, the colors are very vivid. The way the set, specifically, there's, like, this underground hotel that the Lost Boys live in.
Yeah,
that
their looks vampire lair is so cool.
It's a Batman Forever set. It's just, like, it's fake in the same Batman Forever way, and it does a lot
okay.
of shots that are, like, the camera is up in, like, the a corner of the room and kind of taking it all in. And I was just like, it's cool to see that, like, this guy's aesthetic, it, like, fits so much better in the 80s than it did in the 90s when we were kind of, like, we were more apathetic. We were sort of, like, cynical. And in the 80s, we were like, yeah, everything should be colorful. I feel like Joel Schumacher's Batman would have been great in the 80s.
I feel like vague things I remember from that Batman movie, it's very, like, shiny and brightly lit in a way that feels kind of fakey in the way that, like, if you're trying to emulate a comic book, maybe. Whereas, like, this movie, it feels a little more, like, gritty in a way, dusty, maybe. So I wonder if that could be kind of a difference going on there. Especially because it's, like, an original property. Which I guess this movie went through a bunch of rewrites, where it was a lot more of a Goonies-esque movie starring kids. And then they pitched as, like, well, why don't we make them cool, sexy teens instead? And they were like, oh, okay. But then you still kind of get the Goonies track with the kid brother and his two friends and the setting trap sequence. But it feels like I didn't feel like it was out of place. But when I learned about the rewrites later, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes total sense why we get that then.
I was kind of getting that vibe from this movie. It felt like it had two movies going on. It couldn't decide if it was Michael's movie or Sam's movie. And they almost just had like such separate worlds between the Frog Brothers and the Lost Boys. Like, I didn't quite buy the quick descent into the Lost Boysdom that Michael goes through. It feels like he's trying to protect Star from them, and very suddenly he's just in them. And that makes sense to me. If it was originally Sam's movie and he is against the Lost Boys, then it's just like we don't have to deal with him joining the Lost Boys because they're the antagonists, and we're going to work against them throughout the movie.
I think also maybe them being sort of separate in a way sort of works because it's more like Sam is in the human world, and then Michael is kind of set apart, but trying not to be, I guess. One of the things, too, with Star and their romance, I don't, like, super buy it.
Yeah.
It would have worked a lot better if it just focused on, like, him and David and their friendship, kind of like a... You know, we just did this interview with a vampire a couple of months back or whatever. If they had more of a Louis and Lestat sort of dynamic, which it feels like it's kind of there, but they didn't fully commit to it. And they were like, oh, we have to make sure it's not homo enough. So here's a female love interest for some reason.
I definitely was getting sexiness from David and Michael, played by Kiefer Sutherland. Is David a sexy man? It's got this thing going on that I really love in movies where it's just like, he's like, seems like the leader. And when we hear the concept of a lead vampire that must be destroyed, we're like, well, it's probably Kiefer Sutherland because he seems like the leader. Mm-hmm. But there's no like evidence that it is him. And I really appreciate the movie being like, sure seems like he's the lead vampire. And then, nah, he's not. He's not. Somebody else is. Don't stress about it.
Yeah, I think also that plot point with, like, Max looking for a mother for his boys feels a little disconnected, especially because the kids seem to resent him while also kind of, like, reveling in the powers they got from him. And they don't listen to him either, so he doesn't feel like he's their father figure or commander or maker or anything.
Yeah, there's no...
They have one scene together in the beginning where they scope out his shop and are kind of punks and, like, pushing stuff around. And he's like, I thought I told you kids not to come in here. And they're like,
he's, like, kind of afraid, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of, like, he's being played as, like, the nerdy, stuck-up square who's, like, intimidated by the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
There's no evidence in this movie whatsoever that Max is the head vampire.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, like, if they, like, and when you tell me that the movie went through a ton of rewrites, I'll bet it was adding Max as the head vampire as
definitely.
One of them. Because they do the
I think
thing
it's more like the way they frame it, because it focused more on, like, the Lost Boys, kind of like Peter Pan, Eternal Youth, like, that the boys actually needed a mother. But these kids are, like, about to be adults, you know, they're 20-somethings playing teens. They don't really need a mom. So
I always refer to this as the CW problem. The CW loves casting 30-year-olds as 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
And you just got to kind of accept it. Although I will say, it did feel like Kiefer Sutherland... I don't know. Maybe it's just because I only know him as, like, a man of who at age 24 played Jack Bauer on the show 24.
Yeah, that's...
He read to me as an adult man in a way that, like, I know, having watched The O.C., having loved The O.C., that, yes, 30-year-old Benjamin McKenzie can play Ryan Atwood as a high schooler, and God bless him. I know he's not, but I can buy it. Kiefer Sutherland, I was like, you are an adult man who works for a government agency.
Yeah, my first introduction to him is also as Jack Bauer.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't age, like, a ton, I guess. You know, like, a lot of celebrities are like this, whether because it's, you know, product they're using or whatnot. But, like, he didn't age a ton from what I can remember. So, like, when I see him then playing this, like, younger character, especially when he's got, like, a lot of... They had eyeliner as well, speaking of eyeliner, yeah. And kind of like these punk exaggerated outfits. So, you know, it would kind of accentuate things like maybe lines under their eyes or something. So it didn't make them look as like youthful in that way, too. So, yeah, it doesn't feel like there's as much difference between him in the 80s playing a teen vampire and him in like the 2000s playing government agency Jack Bauer man.
I thought he was very fun. Like, he's clearly
he did do a good job. It was great.
The right choice. But like, yeah, there is very much this lack of belief in him being a child that.
Well, I think also just going back to it from our specific perspective, it makes it more difficult. Whereas like for anybody who grew up watching this movie, it's going to be the other way where it's like, man, you're supposed to be like a pop punk counterculture dude. And now you're playing like this straight laced government dog. What the fuck? That's not my Jack Bauer. And I mean, Kiefer Sutherland. Now he is Jack Bauer. It's just what he is.
Too bad that his two most famous roles are the exact opposite of each other in almost every way.
Yes. What a shame.
Roxy, there's a lot of... I don't know if I would call it... This movie felt very preachy to me. It felt very moralistic.
Okay.
It seemed like there was a lot of, like, make sure you're not falling in with the wrong crowd. Like, after school special vibes to this. Did you get any of that?
So I think there's two ways to look at this. I think because they have the vampires be so cool and like kind of like when Kiefer dies and stuff, like, God, what is that music track that plays?
I still believe.
Okay, it is that one.
I don't know. I have no idea.
There's like a part in it where there's kids singing like, thou shalt not fall or something. So it's making it like very dramatic and kind of a sad thing that he's dead, not like super triumphant because they were sort of friends or something.
Yeah.
And like, we don't know his dynamic with Max, the adults. We don't know the rest of the gang's dynamic with Max, like whether he forced them into it or if they had no choice or what. So they're kind of seen more as like these outcast characters who are cool and that you're supposed to like, even though they're doing bad things. So I think they've got that going on. But then, yeah, it is like, well, our main character did like kill them and now he's being more straight laced and like save this girl that he likes and this kid to take them away from the side of like these cool outcast kids. As if, yeah, they need to be saved from it. So it does have that vibe to it, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, that was more the vibe I was getting off of it. I was getting this, like, it feels very, like, it feels like a movie about peer pressure. It is about finding this new group of kids. They're clearly rapscallions. They are not loved by the community. The whole community is kind of centered around, like, fixing their crimes. Like the fact that everybody who is missing is being shown being stolen by the vampire boys. Like, we're all kind of like, it is a society has judged these lost boys, these boys who once fit into society, presumably, as now outcasts. And dear God, somebody who is on our team, somebody who's on the team of society, has fallen in with them. And how does he fall in with them? By sneaking around late at night, by being attracted to a woman and eventually having sex with her, and by drinking from a flagon offered to him by his new buddies. It felt very like, and I don't, tell me if this is me reading something that's not there. Do the Frog Brothers feel religious to you at all?
No, but I think with what I can assume you're getting at, if you told me that they were, I'd also believe that, though. Because the way that they are going after this, they think they know about vampires, all this stuff. They're like, yeah, we're vampire hunters. But they've never actually run into a vampire. That all they have is, like, comic books to tell them. And, like, later we learn that Grandpa knew there were real vampires going around, and who knows what else, maybe, possibly. But these kids don't come across as if they actually know. It's, like, more of conspiracy theorists, where they're talking about this thing that they've never seen before, but they're convinced it's real. Which is a lot of religions, honestly, when you get down to it. Yeah. You can't see some sort of holy, mythical being, but you know it's there, right? Or you believe it's there. So I kind of get that vibe.
Okay, so starting from Sam, there's a line that really stuck out to me that where he said, like, when he first finds out that Michael is becoming a vampire, he says something along the lines of, "My own brother, a shit-sucking vampire?" That felt very judgmental as opposed to horrified. Like,
yeah.
And I almost read that as, like, my own brother has become a teen who drinks after school. Like, that's kind of how I was getting it. And then the fact that, like, the Frog Brothers are like, oh, you need to immediately kill him. It almost felt like you need to cut him out. He has done something so abhorrent, you must destroy him and destroy your relationship.
Yeah, that's true. They don't, because they're not even open to the possibility that he could be saved. They are, like, very black and white, kind of in their judgments. But then because they're just, like, kind of flimsy kids who can't do anything, they can't really enact any of the shitty black and white messaging that they're saying. So, like, when Sam is there and Michael are there, they can, like, kind of keep that in check, I guess, from them doing anything. But I forgot, they say this line, like, two times. They fight for truth, justice, and the American way.
Right!
And then do a salute. I forgot about that.
I would argue that's very 80s,
yeah,
too. Like, I mean,
I think so, too, which, like, at the time, I was like, yeah, it's just kind of, like, goofy shit over the top. But now that we're talking about it, I'm like, yeah, that's one of the first things I kind of say in terms of judgment and, like, what their motivations are.
Right. It's very much got this, like, this is the Reagan era. This is when America was really pro-America, probably for the last time.
We can only hope.
But then, like, they've also got, like, these characters are kind of all over the place because they, like, work at this comic book store. So that's also, like, the Superman credo. So it's kind of like this tie back to them being comic book guys. It's fine. It's fine. This movie script is a little sloppy, but I kind of am okay with it.
And I think also we were talking about sort of the homoerotic subtext here that would have made the movie a lot less complicated, and yeah, a lot more sexy. It would have been a lot more straightforward if they had kept it like that.
Yeah.
Talking about this thing where if we're using, like, vampirism as kind of, like, an allegory or something for that, just being, like, different from this stereotypical norm of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the judgment that Sam remarks at when he says, like, yeah, my own brother is shit-sucking vampire, and then the Frog Boys just being like, you just have to kick him out, like... It's hard to not see something there, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching.
I think you know what, the vibe I was getting, it's like religious people definitely can be, and certainly in the 80s, were like, you are good or bad, you are cut from our family if you are gay or drinking or having sex or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right to say that it's less that they're religious and more that they're black and white thinkers. And they're like, they're almost morally pure in the same way that truth, justice, and the American way implies.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody kind of holds those values in this movie. Even, like, Michael is, like, does a lot of, like, as he's turning into a vampire, there's a lot of, like, don't let them see me like this. Like, don't let them know what I've become. Or, like, I wouldn't have become a vampire if I knew what I was doing. Like, even he, somebody who has dipped into this world of flesh and knows it's bountiless glory is like, I shouldn't have done that. I wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah, like, he's not even told what he's doing, essentially. Like, they don't tell him exactly what's happening. They're just like, hey, you want to be in the gang? Drink it.
Right.
And not like, hey, you want to, like, transform into a completely different creature, live forever, and have to drink blood to survive? Like, he's not told the specifics of anything that he's getting into. Which I think is part of it, where, if he had been told, who knows, maybe he would have. He wouldn't have.
Well, that's kind of a thing, right?
But, like, we don't know.
We just saw this in an Interview with the Vampire, where, like, there are a lot of positives to becoming a vampire.
Yeah.
Like, you can make, ultimately the point is don't do it, but, like, somebody making the pitch for becoming a vampire. It's like, you get to live forever. You get to, everybody's turned on by you. You get to come be in our cool gang. Like, there's something to be said for it, but this movie doesn't even, like, touch the idea that it might be cool and fun to be a vampire. It's the only way Michael starts to become a vampire is not through his own choice. He isn't seduced by it, because this movie is almost inherently saying there is nothing seductive about this. It's only bad and it's only to be looked down upon. And the fact that Kiefer Sutherland, like, I read them as like cool, but I could be getting it wrong. It feels like the movie doesn't want me to think they're cool. The movie almost wants me distanced from them. Yeah. First of all, I think they're cool.
Yeah.
Let it be known.
Okay.
I'm a cool guy. I think cool guys are cool. but like, it did feel like the movie had more judgment to it, or to the Lost Boys specifically, than like, we never saw them. I don't know. Did we ever see them really having fun? Maybe dangling from under the train was a fun moment for them.
Yeah. I mean, every example of seeing them, they're doing something dangerous or something they shouldn't be doing, or just kind of being like a menace, but in that same way, they have like a freedom to kind of do whatever they want. Like, even if they get kicked out of the boardwalk because they're like hassling this hot girl and her boyfriend, then later they go and get revenge on both the couple and the security guard who kicked them out. So it's kind of like,
right,
they'll do whatever they want, but they still have to play by society's rules to an extent, like for, I don't know, just like on the surface, but then they can go and do whatever they want and wreak havoc. So there's kind of a freedom in it in a way that's portrayed.
But I see that. I also see that as like the movie saying like, be afraid of them. They're the monsters. Like,
yeah. But I guess like,
you would never want to become this.
In that cool sort of counterculture way, because the movie opens just showing what felt like too many minutes of screen time of just like all these different types of people who live in this town. And there's like so many different counterculture looking people who live there, as well as just more normies, and just kind of showing how they all sort of coexist. So I think like seeing that kind of primed me to not think they were bad, even if they were kind of being rapscallions. And then our main character, mostly main character anyway, Michael, he's kind of somewhere in between. Like, he's a cool guy, but he's not really a punk. But like, yeah, he could easily fall in with them or other crowds, I could see.
You know, he's basically Ronald Reagan. He's a cool guy, but he's not counterculture. And in fact, really, really the flag bearer for the culture that is being countered.
But I think, again, the issue is that he's drawn into this gang by Star, who is someone who doesn't... She drank the blood, but is not like in on it. Like, she doesn't want to kill people. So she's like not, she's in the gang, but she's not. So that's why I have kind of a problem with like her being there and the little kid who's there, who is like her brother. So like, they were using the little brother as like a manipulation tactic to keep her there, I guess.
Oh, is that what the idea was?
That's what I assumed, but I don't actually know.
I was like really bummed out by Star, because her whole thing is just like tied up in Michael and being into him, and
that's what it ends up being. And then she can't even save herself, even though she should have like pseudo vamp powers and she could just walk away or something.
And then she also takes on this like motherly role for Laddie, the little boy in The Lost Boys. It just felt, she felt very tropey. This movie is not a great Bechdel test nominee. The mom, too. The mom is just all wrapped up in either her children or her man. Like, they're hitting a lot of, like,
I think she's
not
kind
great
of,
women-y tropes.
The mom is kind of like a archetype-type character or caricature. What is the word I'm looking for? She feels so tropey that, like, it didn't stick out as much as, like, Star did, who has nothing else going on. The mom is kind of, like, tropey, but, like, cares about her kids and is trying to make things work, and she just got a divorce, which is probably not as common to show, like, a divorced mom in the 80s, I would think, where she's, like, making
her choice. To the point where the movie had to comment on it.
Yeah.
The fucking grandpa had to be like, wow, a woman getting a divorce?
But,
and you think your life might be better? Wow, all right. I'm going to be in fucking Looney Tunes town with you. Great.
I thought he was saying it more as to, like, make fun of it, because he's like, man, you should have dumped him, like, years ago. I thought he made a comment like that. I think he was more ribbing her to be like, you should have done it earlier, because now look how much happier you are, is how
that's
I read
true.
It.
He did, you're right. He did say something along the lines of, like, you're the only woman who could make her life better with a divorce. But I guess I read that as that's kind of like a weird double-edged little knife to stick in. Like, you think divorce is going to be good, but maybe not.
Yeah, I think just like that line changes. It changes so much on whatever your read is on his delivery, yeah. I guess. Which I think based on like some of the other things he said, I thought he was more like being supportive of her and kind of like giving her a hard time. Like, yeah, that guy sucked. You should have made your life happier sooner and gotten out of there. But yeah, I can definitely see the other read on it too. But yeah, like if Star and the little kid had been deleted and it was more about David and Michael and like their push and pull, either attraction or friendship or whatever, that would have been a much more interesting aspect and would have been a lot more concise, less confusing, I think, with everything else going on.
Yeah, this movie, it you're exactly right. This movie has a lot going on. It does sound very much like I didn't know that it had been rewritten a bunch, but the moment you said it's been rewritten a bunch, like a lot of things clicked into place.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Whether or not it was added haphazardly or makes a lot of sense, what do you make narratively, symbolically, of the idea of Max being the head vampire?
In terms, just like in general or like...
Yeah, like what?
Just
what,
the
like
idea.
We always talk
it.
About like ultimately like the biggest bad usually ends up being what the movie is kind of about or what it's commenting on. I think that maybe doesn't hold as true with this. But was there anything that like jumped out at you like why they would make a decision to make Max this big bad?
I guess maybe sort of showing that this guy who seems like he is a safe choice. He's like also rich because we kind of get a glimpse into he's got a giant house. He owns his own business. He's seen as friendly, well put together. He's like kind of tall, which is usually idealized. He seems like this very safe choice for the mom. And then it shows that he is not a safe choice at all, which I think is an interesting aspect to his character that like, I kind of like how they're saying that because yeah, there's a lot of guys who are like that are very two-faced who they might seem one way. And then when you get to know them, they're something else. And maybe that's kind of just kind of showing how the mom could be better off on her own, maybe, which maybe would be a good thing to say. But, like, his involvement with the boys is so...
nebulous.
Yeah, like, when you think about vampire movies where there is a vampire who is in love with the, like, secondary main character who he's going after, or the main character. You know, like, think about Dracula that we watched recently as well, where Dracula is in love with Mina and, like, has this all-consuming passion and love for her to the point where, like, even though he wants to change her and she wants to be changed, she hesitates for a minute and is like, but then you be a monster and I don't want you to regret this and be a monster that you hate. Where you don't get any of that from Max, that he really... His first comment when she says something about how when the Lost Boys leave and they're... you know, just kind of being punks in the shop. She's like, oh, you know, they're just young. We were like that once. It's no big deal. She doesn't really judge them. She's just like, ah, kids. And he's like impressed with that and is like, you have a very gentle spirit or something like that. Right. And so it's not even that he's in love with her or desires her. He just wants a motherly figure for these kids for some reason. These teens who... or like,
well, they're coming in and harassing him in his own store. Like, he does need somebody to help him get these kids in
line. That's the thing too. Like, if he is supposed to be the lead vampire, he should be doing that himself. It's really weird that like he can't keep his own thralls under his control or get them to do what he wants, and they seem to like resent him. You know, like maybe they would if it was kind of like their real dad, you know, where it's like, you can't tell me what to do, Dad. You're lame. I'm going to go and do cool things with my friends. You know, like, they have a completely different dynamic that is not, like, a normal parent-child dynamic. And we only see them interact in that single scene. So, like, we get nothing for, like, what their deal is. Because they're going to do that reveal later. So they're probably like, well, if we tell the audience by showing scenes and stuff, then they'll know and there won't be a surprise. But... because they wanted to do that, they sacrificed making it make sense or making you have any sort of attachment to it, I guess.
Yeah, like they do something that I always think is like a cardinal sin in a mystery. And it's like they bring up the ultimate, for lack of a better term, the killer, like the whodunit, who if this movie's mystery is who is the central vampire and they've got like their suspects.
Yeah.
I always hate it when a major suspect is cleared and then at the end turns out to be... the killer or to be the one who did it.
Yeah.
Like, if they wanted to keep that a surprise, like, don't even raise the question that maybe he's the head vampire. Just keep him under the radar.
It's so strange that the frog boys even zeroed in on it. I feel like I got to rewatch the movie now to try and figure out how they... I don't even know how they decided on it. Was it just like,
Roxy,
who someone
they said
knew
the most
in your
insane,
life? What did they say?
They said the most insane thing I've ever heard in a movie.
Okay. What was it?
They said, all of this started when Mom started working at the video store.
Oh, okay. So that's literally the only thing that they have.
It's the flimsiest of justifications. There might be more. I might have missed something, but that was what
I
heard.
No, I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised.
And I was like, uh-oh.
Because, yeah, that's so strange. Weird.
The thing I was kind of feeling about Max was that, like, he almost feels like, and it's kind of what you were saying too, like, the idea that Max is sort of the embodiment of the culture. And this movie opens with all these shots of punks living in Santa Clara, and our heroes, you know, work at the comic book store and wear bandanas. Like, it does feel like we've got this counterculture versus culture battle going on. And it almost feels like, as this movie hemmed closer towards, like, no, actually, culture is good, and morality is good, and going to bed at 9 p.m. when you tell your mother you're going to is good. Like, it almost feels like Max is a remnant of, like, a more subversive, more interesting movie, where it is about, like, the Lost Boys are kind of the heroes and are more heroic and end up helping Michael to fight against the culture because they demand acceptance as who they are and the kind of kids who like to stay out late and wear leather jackets.
That would have been great, man, if they had kind of like, if we knew more about their dynamic, like, were they forced to become vampires and now this is just kind of how they deal with it, or they were into it the whole time, but maybe they just don't want to be under the thumb of some guy.
Right.
Yeah, that would have been way more interesting if we had them actually band together against Max instead. Or, like, at least have that conversation so they can either choose to stay with him or leave, maybe. Because it seems like they were not given that choice at all. Whereas Max is able to choose.
Yeah, if they had killed Max, like, 25 minutes before the end of the movie, and then they had to, like, figure out how to become vampires again because they missed it. Like, that'd be cool and interesting.
Yeah.
That'd be, like, a fun little thing.
Yeah, because it does sort of give you that sense. Like, I mean, it is called The Lost Boys. It's kind of like, if they suddenly didn't have their vampiric powers and eternal youth, then what would they do with their lives?
Yeah.
Because it's no longer this, like, we get to be forever punk teens. It's like, well, we're going to be in our 20s, and then we're going to be in our 30s. We're going to be in our 40s. What are we going to do? We still gonna be riding dirt
like
bikes
that,
and living in this haunted dirt basement? I don't know.
Because at that point, they're like the Peter Pan Lost Boys that like are suddenly back in the world, and they're like, "Oh, I guess it was time to grow up." Like, then you've got to deal with, I don't know. There's something meaty there,
and I think that's why the title is called Lost Boys, and why you have remnants of like, these boys need a mother. Like, that's a Peter Pan thing with what they wanted Wendy to be, right? Like,
sure.
When they kidnap them, and then, you go to this land of eternal youth where you're just kids forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's remnants of that, too, that, kind of get passed over or trampled over in lieu of other things.
I will say, as the movie stands, there's one little idea I guess I had about what Max and then even the grandpa's line at the end were kind of getting at that I didn't mind, and I don't think the movie is necessarily saying this, but it's again like what my brain starts thinking. I kind of like the idea that if Max is the big bad, then Michael and his mother are kind of going through the same temptations of like, is it worth it to become a vampire for this person I'm sexually attracted to? And so that's like becomes this connective moment through the generations. And then we get the grandpa's final line, which is just like, man, the one thing I could never stomach, all these damn vampires. It's just like the older generation has gone through it. The older generation has experienced this and knows that like these temptations that these shitty vampire people have placed upon us are not as world defining as certainly teenagers believe, but even a recently divorced mother could believe. It's just like, man, it's kind of annoying how you fucking fall in love with these shitty people and want to bang them because they are hot. Like, grandpa's just like sort of this acknowledgement. Like, so if all of these generations have gone through this same issue, I kind of like that as this like connective through line. We all get it. We all know what vampires are. The younger people happen to be in the thralls of it, whereas the older generation has a little bit of distance and can process it, see it for what it is.
I'd say also on that same note, Grandpa's the one who comes and kills the big bad right at the last minute by like destroying That's the true. Side of his house and stabbing him. Which is sort of interesting. I do like the idea of the older generation protecting the younger generation in that way as kind of like a symbolic gesture.
Yeah.
But also, it's just so abrupt where Max is finally like, "Wahaha! I'm the actual villain. Now I'm going to take your mother." And then he's just like immediately hit by a car.
Yeah,
essentially. Which is funny, but also like anticlimactic in a way. Where it's like, okay, I guess that wasn't really something we needed to dwell on, I suppose. It's another thing that minimizes Max, like, as a threat, also, which is kind of a bummer. Like, again, if you think of a vampire in any other movie, they feel dangerous in that way. And, like, the Lost Boys get that across, too. And, again, if Max has, like, been living in this culture and he's trying to blend in a way, and it's, like, almost way more insidious that he doesn't appear threatening until he makes his move. But yeah, it's just like another thing that feels like it is at the cost of just having a twist at the end that we didn't need to sacrifice more things in the movie just to have that happen.
I would also argue that gets that almost felt a little to me more like culture-y. Like again, like who is the one who's ultimately going to save you from the drinking and the drugs that your friends prescribe for you? It's your family. Like, aren't we right to listen? We should have listened to Grandpa all along. We should have gone home at 9 p.m. Like Ronald Reagan tells us to do. Like, it does almost feel like the argument is like, still be a good boy.
Yeah. I guess us as millennials, we're used to having like the older generation just completely kind of fuck us over in so many different ways and not like support us. It's one of those things that definitely makes me want to make sure I never become that kind of adult where you are doing that to the future generation.
Right. You got to accept it. That's why we got to get on TikTok, Roxy.
Oh, God. I don't think I can.
Otherwise, we're going to be that kind of adult. It's just the fact.
I feel like that's like the line where I'm like, I think I'm too old to figure out TikTok and also have yet another social media to manage. Even though everybody keeps telling me it's great for discoverability, but it's like, cool, if I had the social media manager who I could have help me with that, great, I'd do it. But I can't do it.
No. Who's got the time? We've got to drink our Metamucil in the morning and go for walks in the park. That's something old people do, right? Yeah, okay.
Sometimes, yeah, sure. Drink prune juice. It's good,
Roxy,
for you.
That's all I've got to say about whatever this movie was called, The Lost Boys. Anything else you got?
One interesting thing that they did that was having the boys hang from the ceiling with monster toes. They have like monster feet. So they're like hanging like bats from the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking bat feet, like long claw like bat feet.
Yeah. They have like claw like bat feet, but like their hands and stuff. I think they do have more like pronounced fingernails and stuff, but like only their feet are like monstery. I guess their faces morph. Yeah. So that's another thing. Joss Whedon, like, Buffy exists because Lost Boys exists, I think.
Of course it does. Yeah. That's another one of those things where the moment you said it, I was like, yep, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. That is exactly how Buffy vampires work.
Yeah. And he talked about that in some interviews and stuff as well. And, like, even just the way the vampires look in this, like, their face makeup, that's how they look in Buffy as well.
Yeah.
And it's taking place in, like, a, you know, small Californian made-up town once again. And has this dichotomy of, you know, even if somebody's a vampire, that doesn't mean they're bad, like with our main character and other things like that. So it's interesting to see the impact that this movie has had on, like, pop culture and just vampire genre and vampire, like, modern vampire lore that will either get brought up or used. And just seeing how influential this movie was. Very, very cool and neat to kind of see the ripples down the road. And how this affected things. There's probably more examples that I could come up with if I had time too. But Buffy is like one of the big ones you can point to. Because then that once again sort of like had a big impact on vampires and pop culture.
Was The Lost Boys the first to introduce this concept that you kill the head vampire and everybody else turns normal?
I think again. It might have been, actually.
It's certainly the first time I remember. It's, like, the oldest movie, but I do... That feels like something that's part of the vampire mythos now.
Yeah, and you will see, like, whatever piece of media is, like, doing vampires, they will either take or leave that, depending on if it serves mm-hmm. the story or if they find it interesting. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think that that is where it kind of introduced it to the cultural zeitgeist to be a vampire lore fact. to do that, which...
I like it.
Yeah, it's neat.
I like a way out of vampirism.
Yeah, or just having there be, like, more stages, more commitment to it, or just, like, making it a little bit more complex, maybe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's neat. I think that's probably the only other thing I gotta say about it.
Okay.
So, Mikey, down here in the scary basement, we have a rating system. We'll choose a rating out of 5 thumbs, severed thumbs, that is, except for our 2 thumbs, which we have, so... 2 regular human thumbs that are attached to our bodies, and then these 5 severed thumbs that can be taken out of this basket of severed hands. So, Mikey, out of 5 thumbs, what did you give The Lost Boys?
I don't think I need any of the hands. I think it's a 2 thumbs up movie for me.
Okay.
Great atmosphere. The story is all over the place. It's very jumbled. I think this movie, and I Googled around a little bit, and it seems like there have been whisperings of it for a while... This movie is the perfect candidate for a remake.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet, to be honest.
Yeah, it's ideal. Like, it needs to clarify its point of view. Its story, again, is just, like, all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about so many threads that would be really good. Like, I think this movie is very compelling and fun to watch, even despite the fact that when you, like, you know, break down the specifics of why things are happening, it's kind of a mess. Like, it's very easy to gloss over that when you're watching it and have fun with it.
mm-hmm. Yeah. But so that's what I give it thumbs up for, 2 thumbs up from me, myself, just for, like, its atmosphere and its vibe. It's got great, great mm-hmm. vibes. I think this movie does a good job making you feel like you're in a weird California town in the 80s. And it is very fun. But my story brain was itching the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What are you giving it?
So I gave it 3 thumbs. So mm-hmm. a little bit higher. And a little bit higher than half a score, you know? It was better than half for me. Again, like I said, this movie's very fun. And yeah, there's a lot of things that when you actually think about it, you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Or why'd they do that? But you don't notice it as much when you are watching it, and yet the music's really fun. We talked about the cinematography and everything. The acting, too. There's, like, a certain quality to their acting that is very, like, exaggerated in a fun way. It just needed to be gayer. Not gay enough for me.
Yeah. No, I hear that. I hear that. This movie would be a lot better. I think that would be what a remake would do. Would gay it up.
Yep.
And it'd be interesting, and it would be about a counterculture, and about being yourself, even in the face of a culture telling you what you should and shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
It should be more about, like, you choosing to have this alternative lifestyle instead of having it kind of thrust upon you the way the main character has
or tricked into it.
Yeah, exactly. But so, yeah, very fun. I highly recommend it. If you're listening to this and somehow have not seen this movie, go see it. It's really fun. It's on Tubi, actually, so you can watch it for free. No free excuse to not watch it.
Yeah.
So, Mikey, do you have a question for me?
I do. Okay, Roxy, this movie, there are a lot of different cultures kind of mashed up in here. Early in the movie, we meet a lot of punks. We'll eventually see the bikers, the comic book nerds, the taxidermists, whatever the hell Sam is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different vibes, a lot of different scenes coming together in The Lost Boys. If you were in an 80s over-the-top movie... What would your scene be? What scene would you be in?
So this one was kind of hard because, like, a lot of things I would normally point to, like video games, like the games that were around in 1987, I would not have given a shit about. Sorry.
They're bad.
So, yeah, I wouldn't have cared about stuff like that. And, like, you know, plenty of other things wouldn't have been brought over here. So I probably would have. Stories are my favorite thing. So I probably just would have been reading books all the time, I think. Probably I would have been, like, a big book nerd. Maybe kind of on the side of that conspiracy theory nerd who maybe gives, like, insight into the movie. If I'm in an 80s movie, maybe I'm the one given the facts about vampires or something.
That sounds right. In a Breakfast Club terminology, I think you would be the Ally Sheedy. You'd be, like, kind of the buttoned up nerd who's, like, not so much nerd, but, like, you're reading a lot. You're very quiet. You're, like,
maybe
pulled into
yeah.
your own world.
So I could definitely see that, or I could see myself tipping over into the just like kind of art scene or something, where I'm just, you know, maybe I'm
fingerless gloves.
Maybe fingerless gloves. I'm just making giant paintings or something.
Yeah, Jackson Pollock paintings, and you're angry at the principal.
Yeah, I could definitely see myself being that type as well.
I can see that.
So it was kind of hard to pick for me. I don't know, I feel like one of those two groups. Maybe that's not an actual answer, but what do you think, Mikey?
That sounds right.
Where would you be?
I think I would be, listen, I'm not a revolutionary. I am not a counterculture guy. I would be wearing white slacks. I would button up my polo shirt and tuck it into those pants. I think I would be, if I was in an 80s movie, I would be closer to Emilio Estevez. I would be a football player. Okay. I wouldn't have had video games to distract me.
Yeah,
I would have gotten super into sports, and I think eventually,
that's
if
true.
I was an
you
adult
are a big sports
in this world,
guy, Mikey. Yeah, I bet you probably would have doubled down on sports.
I was distracted from it as a child, but they're just simply less distractions. I think I would end up being a Michael Douglas "Greed Is Good" kind of guy.
Oh no, Mikey, no!
I think I'd have slicked my hair straight back, and I think I would have approached the stock market with the same sort of fervor that I approached the football field.
Oh,
no prisoners. Harm the other person.
Oh,
only
no.
One can win, one can lose. Because that's what the 80s were kind of about. Thank God I grew up and kind of came of age in the early 2000s when we were kind of like, we could start having emotional intelligence.
Yeah. I will say you have ska tendencies though, Mikey. So you don't think you would become like a music guy instead?
That's the most fucked up thing you've ever said
what?
To me. You're right. I absolutely have ska tendencies. And I did wear like Vans and a little top hat in high school. So yeah, because punk music has always been a little abrasive to me. I like pop punk a lot.
Uh-huh.
Like I don't like it raging against the government or the banks. I like it raging against the girl who just broke your heart.
Okay.
I could have definitely seen myself getting into a softer music scene.
Okay. So the two sides of the same coin, we both had some duality going on there, Mikey.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we are more complex than the characters in 80s movies.
I know, right?
But maybe not unfortunately. For good or
ill. Yes. But hey, that makes us not typecast, though. We could star in multiple movies as different clicks.
We're going to have a long career in 80s movies, Roxy.
I can't wait. All right. So we made a bet last week, which was... How many Lost Boys? How many Lost Boys, Mikey?
How many Lost Boys?
How many of them
I
are
said
there?
There would be six.
You said six. Okay. And I said 12, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's where we came down. I'm going to win this point. I am going to win the bet.
Yes, you are closer.
It's somewhere between like lower than what I said or higher than I said, but within two. So there, I would say there are between 4 and 8 Lost Boys.
8. Okay. So there's the four main guys. Then,
yep.
Of course, we have Star and the little kid, which makes 6.
I also said
Michael?
It could be argued Michael and Max.
Yeah. Yeah.
So depending on how stringent you are on the Lost Boys, listen, Max is not a boy. And he certainly doesn't seem lost. He has a clear vision.
Yep.
Knows what he's doing. It's between 4 and 8. So
yes,
whatever the
I
number
agree.
Is, this point's gonna be mine, baby.
Mine. You won it, Mikey.
Mine. I didn't know if I was gonna say the point is going to me or the point is mine, so it came out mine.
Yeah, I like mine, though.
Which I do a lot.
It's fun.
That means our total score right now stands at Roxy with 44 points, Mikey with 35 points, Ty with 4.
All right. You're catching up to me, Mikey.
Hey, Roxy, here comes the demon bot. He's got a glint in his eye.
Oh, he does.
Mikey and Roxy, it has become clear that no matter how obscure, how horrifying, or how glam rock 80s the movie I demand of you is, you still manage to watch the film. Meaning I am unable to collect your souls to claim your bodies as my own. Therefore, there is no film for you next week.
Nothing? Okay, so we just get a free week? Is that what he's saying?
No, instead, you must participate in the Whispering Skullsies.
The what?
You, Mikey and Roxy, will present awards to the films watched so far as part of the first season of Scary Basement. Be sure to follow the Scary Basement Twitter account at @scary_basement to find out the categories in the week leading up to the awards.
Roxy,
Mikey?
This is big news. I didn't know Scary Basement was a season-based podcast.
I didn't know that either. We're in a season? We're in season one. Okay.
This is season one, and it sounds like season one's about to wrap up.
Damn, okay.
It's huge.
Wait, so that means The Lost Boys was our last normal episode in season one, right? Because next episode is not a movie.
That is correct. Lost Boys is the final episode for the first season of Scary Basement with a retrospective finale. After that, we shall take a hiatus while I come up with a new slate of films so that I might find one that can claim your souls.
I'm a little worried what he's going to be planning in these months off, Mikey, but I do like the idea of us getting some time to not be cursed in a basement. That's usually a good thing for most people.
It's going to be good for my lungs. There's absolutely some sort of mildewy asbestos is what it's called, down here harming me in my life.
It's a mutated curse kind, asbestos.
The very bestos.
Yep.
So, Roxy, next week is the Whispering Skullsies, and it sounds like we're going to be giving away awards to our favorite movies that we've watched down here over the course of season one of Scary Basement.
Okay, so it's an award show. That's fun. I've never been a part of an award show before. I've watched plenty of them, but never been in one before. How exciting.
And this is going to be a good award show because we've never had a Whispering Skullsies before.
Yeah.
So we have no idea what's going to happen. We don't know what kind of categories there'll be. We don't know what kind of special guests they're going to be. We don't know what we're going to wear. What's it going to look like to dress up for the Scary Basement?
Yeah. So do we have to wear like fancy Oscars attire, or are we like dressing up like monsters or something to fit in more? And that's
fancy. It's a great question. is a fancy monster.
Yeah, kind of
dress you wear to a horror movie award show.
Okay.
Do not worry. You shall be contacted by the ghost of a Victorian seamstress who will go over your wardrobe options with you. Just don't say the word Applejack around her. There was an incident.
Okay, great. That's great to know. Okay, so I guess we'll find
that's
out.
That's exciting. Yeah. So next week, we will do the Whispering Skullsies. We'll give some awards out. We'll see some guests. We'll wear something nice. And then that will be April the 27th.
Okay.
And then we'll take a break until, what do you think, Demonbot? When should we come back for season two?
Season two of The Scary Basement will begin on Tuesday, August 29th, and proceed on further Tuesdays from that point forward. Yes, this is also a stealth time slot change in between seasons.
So, Tuesday, August 29th, Scary Basement Season 2 will debut. Next week, April 27th, the Scary Basement Season 1 finale, The Whispering Skullsies.
So, Mikey, we've been updating, like, every Thursday for, like, what, two years or something?
A long time.
Now we're going to be switching to Tuesdays? What?
Ugh. It's so great. Isn't it? I just think that's great. You know, Monday, it's like a tough day, but like Tuesdays, I think is the worst day of the week. Just like, because it's like, oh, the week's really just still getting started. I just went through a crummy Monday. We're going to be there to give you a little horror movie jolt as your work week really gets into the thick of it.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Tuesday. We're going to be a Tuesday podcast now.
I love Tuesdays.
All right.
For podcasts. Not for being alive.
Oh, I mean, I like being alive any day. Tuesday's one of those days.
Oh, interesting.
All right, let's talk about some more stuff that's making us happy then. Because why not? We're on a roll. Let's just keep going. So, Mikey, what's making you happy this week?
I mentioned earlier it was the dark mirror of your eyeliner.
Yeah, what
what's making me happy is skincare.
Oh.
I gotta give a shout out to my buddy on Instagram, Simply Kevin. It's Simply spelled S-I-M-P-L-E-E.
Okay.
Simply Kevin. Kevin Lee. He is a skincare influencer.
Ooh.
He understands how skin works, and he's a real life friend of mine, and gave me like a starter skincare set. You know, I've been very, you know, I'm a wash my face with a bar of soap kind of guy.
Oh, no.
And yeah, it turns out you're not supposed to be doing
that. I'm glad that Kevin has come into your life, Mikey, and has done this for you. I'm very thankful for that. Thank you, Kevin.
I got this beautiful charcoal face wash that I use. It's making my pores and skin.
I use charcoal face wash too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
And then he also gave me a little bit of like sunscreen moisturizer. So I'll get a little bit of SPF protection, but it also like combines your pores. So it doesn't look, it makes your skin look like one chunk of flesh as opposed to a pocky little Jackson Pollock painting. That's the second time I referenced that. And also another kind of moisturizer that I don't understand what the difference is. But I like that one too. And it just makes my skin feel nice. I was kind of falling victim to dry little patches of skin, especially under my right eye. Ooh. I always had like just this really dry patch of skin, and it's gone now.
That's wonderful.
It's smooth.
Hell yeah.
My skin feels alive. I can sing. That has nothing to do with my skin, but I am capable of it. So yeah, it's Simply Kevin and the skincare routine that he set up for me.
That's wonderful. Well, it sounds like he saved you, so he can probably save other folks. So go give him a follow. Sounds like it's just a layup.
His content is incredible. He is so good at making skincare just like fun and jovial.
Wonderful. So the thing that's making me happy this week is actually related to our podcast network.
Ooh.
So apropos of nothing, I didn't make them do this, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about it, that they've found their own way to this. But a couple of the Super NPC boys are playing Final Fantasy 14 now, kind of.
Oh, boy.
They're dipping their toe in, and I hope they continue with it. I'm looking forward to being able to play with them. We're going to be streaming this week, actually, so like in a couple of days. So this podcast will have already come out long after we've already done it. But yeah, we're going to be doing a stream together. And this is like the first time, I guess, I've streamed with them.
Yeah.
Not sure if it'll be on my channel or on their channel. We're still deciding that. But I'm looking forward to doing more streams with those guys and more streams with you, Mikey. As well.
I love streaming. Which, I don't love streaming Final Fantasy 14, but anything else.
Yeah, I can't remember if we talked about it on this podcast aside from just, you know, our basic shout outs, but we're doing a new thing with our Patreon episodes, which are Press X to Scream, which is we are playing the game on Twitch for a couple hours and we are live recording the podcast. So you can kind of get a behind the scenes look. And then it will be unlisted. We'll eventually put it up, like, probably months and months from now on our YouTube page. But, you know, we're going to be streaming more games together for the Super NPC Network, which is going to be great. And just in general, I mean, you and I have been streaming games together for a long time anyway, Mike, even before we were doing this specifically.
Boy, have we.
So it'll be fun to have more reasons to do that. I'm looking forward to that.
I love streaming. Hell yeah.
And right on the back of doing those plugs, we're going to do our haunted plugs. So get ready. So since it's time for haunted plugs, make sure you are following Scary Basement on Twitter, which is @scary_basement. And on Instagram, which is @scarybasementpod, all one word. Mikey, where can people find you on the internet?
I am on Twitter @secretblimp. And you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/secretblimp.
I am on Twitter as Red Mage Roxy, and I am on Twitch as Red Mage Roxy, where I stream 3 days a week, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Also, make sure that you give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you're listening to podcasts.
And leave us a review. That really helps us out. Another way you can show your support for Scary Basement is to check out our Patreon. We were talking about it a little bit, but let's talk about it some more. Super NPC Radio is where we have hitched our Patreon flag. You don't hitch a flag. Sign up at patreon.com/supernpcradio. There you get bonus episodes of Scary Basement, which cover horror video games. It's the Press X to Scream that we were just talking about. You also get the years and years of content from the rest of the video game loving fellas over there at Super NPC.
Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends. And, as always, do not sign any contracts offered to you by demon robots. Mikey, this is the last time I get to say this season.
Yeah.
Don't sign any contracts offered to you by demon robots, guys. You're going to have to keep this in your brain for, like, the next couple months, okay?
Pray that he at least gives you an off season.
Truly.
See you next week.